Welcome to the Bunker Hill Cheesecast, brought to you by Heine's Cheese Chalet, a little place with big taste. I'm Missy Horsfall, Director of Tourism Relations. The Amish culture can seem perplexing to those outside of it, but like any other people group, there are reasons behind what they do and how they do it. The more we seek to know about other cultures, the more understanding we can glean into the hearts and lives of people. And that is the key. We're all just people, regardless of where or how we live. Whatever it looks like on the inside we are more alike than we are different. Misconceptions happen when we close our eyes to understanding or take blanket statements as truth for everyone when, in reality, we're all different, and even growing up in the same household can produce different experiences. One of the obvious differences in the Amish culture is that they do not view or use technology in the same way as the rest of the world. While most people embrace new technology automatically, the Amish take time to consider and weigh the usefulness against the result and impact it will make to their world. It's important to note that the Amish don't consider technology in itself bad or evil, but that they recognize that it has the possibility of taking from them what they value most. Televisions, radios, and personal computers can draw a person's interest and take time away from family or draw them into the outside world. Hence, they aren't allowed. Other types of technology are allowed. Gas grills, shop tools, camping equipment, even farm equipment has been modified to help make their tasks more efficient and freeing up time to spend with family or church. I would venture to say that most of us in the modern world can attest to the fact that technology can indeed undermine worthy traditions. For instance, take a moment while in a public place and see how many people have their heads bent towards a screen of some kind, a cell phone or iPad or computer. Sadly, for all their value, this kind of technology has resulted in less interactions with others, perhaps even causing isolation from others. Certainly for the Amish, these things would accelerate assimilation into society and all of its values, which can differ greatly from what the Amish have chosen to follow. With these same thoughts in mind, that is, preserving their culture, cars would bring greater mobility and possibly erode the community and local ties. Horse and buggy transportation keeps the community anchored in its local geographical base. Most Amish groups forbid using electricity from public utility lines because they feel electricity from batteries, gas, or solar energy is more controllable, local, and helps keep them independent from the outside world. While it may seem the Amish have one foot in the 19th century and one foot in the 21st, their aim is to slow the pace of social change and preserve their traditional way of life by mastering technology and having it work for them, rather than the other way around. My guest today is Esther Schlava. Thanks for coming back on the podcast, Esther.
Good morning, Missy. It's good to be here.
I have lots of questions about the Amish, and I am so thankful that you're willing to kind of give us a glimpse into that world and what a wonderful heritage it is for you. I know big family, lots of relationships in that culture. It's a wonderful thing to have as a heritage. So tell me about your leisure time in the Amish culture.
Well, we had a pony, we had riding horses, and that was probably the main thing that my brothers and sisters did for leisure time.
Okay.
Now, I myself absolutely do not like to ride a horse.
No, say it ain't so, Esther. I love horses, but I can understand. It's not everybody's favorite thing to do.
I just have a couple experiences that were not the best. And one of them that I vividly remember is we were all outside and I had to get on this pony. His name was Trigger. And so I got on the pony and I was riding it around scaredly because I was scared to death of it. And all at once he discovers that I'm scared and he starts running for the barn full blast. And the faster he goes, the louder I get. The louder I get, the faster he goes. We took a ride down into the barn, and I'll never forget, I got off of him as fast as I could, And as I jumped off, he took a step forward and stepped smack on the top of my foot.
Yeah, that's no fun.
So, my leisure wasn't always fun for me.
So, you weren't big on the horses.
Although, I was not.
Now, it does surprise me that you... Were they riding horses that you kept for leisure, or were they horses that were buggy horses and you just rode?
No, it was actually... Mom and Dad bought a pony for us. Trigger was our first pony. He was a mean one. He ran away with us kids. He was like barn sour.
Yeah.
So every time we would be on him and away from the barn, he would all at once decide in his head, he needs to get to the barn as fast as possible.
So he'd turn around and take
him. There was two other episodes that I remember that I was on him that he took me to the barn, and I just don't like that. But anyway, that actually ruined it for me for riding horses. And we had my sisters. I have three sisters, and all three of them loved riding horses. So they always, and my brothers, they would train ponies. So they did a lot of that. And then we would also do bike riding. I know we rode our bikes a lot. We were allowed to have bicycles where our cousins were not.
I see.
So different areas of the Amish were not allowed to have the bicycles. And we were in an area that they were allowed to. And so we would, when they would come visit us, we would ride our bikes. They would ride our bikes. They learned to ride bike at our house. And we had a driveway, and we'd drive. It was kind of a long driveway that wasn't ours, that was right above our house. And we would just go down that driveway a lot. So riding bikes is one thing that we did. And then another thing I remember is we would have a creek that was very close to our house. Like it was less than half a mile down the road. So we would walk to that creek and we'd play in the water.
Well, the creek and the horses and even the bicycles, boy, that's right up my alley. That's what I remember as a kid, some of the most fun that we would have. Mm-hmm. But as you got older then, tell me a little bit about what, as teenagers or as young adults.
Oh, dear.
Or maybe we don't want to get into the leisure of that. One day we'll talk about Rumspringa, but...
I thought that's what you were getting to. I thought you were getting to the Rumspringa. That's why I said, oh, dear. I would say I would bike to my friend's house almost every Sunday. I would ride my bicycle to my friend's house like every Sunday, or she would ride hers to mine. That's what we did mostly as teenagers for leisure. So once you are 16, it's kind of like you automatically do as you please. That's one thing that I would say in the Amish culture that what I experienced was, my parents would tell me, don't do this, or you shouldn't be doing that, or something like that. But for the most part, there was not as much guidance from parents after you were 16 as I feel like we give our children today.
Is that because, because were you working at that point?
Yes, I would have been working when I was 14.
So you're working outside the home, and in some cases it's almost a full-time job, mm-hmm. And you've sort of moved into the adult world and realm of work and moving forward. I wonder if it was just seen as a step toward adulthood. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think it was, and I think, well, once you're 16, you're in Rumspringa.
Okay.
So then you know everything.
You know everything. How long does that... Maybe we should talk about Rumspringa.
I think that's where we're headed. I think I do.
I guess we have to because every Amish teen goes through that period of time,
yes,
correct?
Yes, absolutely. And I don't know where that word came from, but I know that when you say I was running around, I mean, seriously? You're just out in the yard running around?
Is that what that means.
Okay. Rumspringa means running around. So when you talk in English, it doesn't make sense. But I guess we'll just use Rumspringa because that is when you're...
How long is that time period? From 16
to... It differs with different people. But for the most part, Rumspringa is like 16 to 20, 21.
Okay.
It's usually until they join church.
Okay.
And then they kind of... Well, if they're not married, it's actually till they get married.
Okay.
So it's pretty much... You're in Rumspringa
until you make the decision to join the church
and get married
and stay in the Amish culture. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And during that time, you're allowed to do things that you were forbidden to do before in terms of some of the teen boys have cars, correct?
Yes. And I remember as a teenager, I wore jeans and like I dressed up in English clothes.
Rumspringa, I think, is interesting because it's the juxtaposition of, okay, here's this lifestyle you're raising your children in, and then oops, all of a sudden now they're kind of let go and figure mm-hmm. it out. Go and find out if this is what you want. What's interesting to me is that a huge percentage of the Amish do join the church. I mean, mm-hmm. the Amish culture is growing. Large families, all of that has something to do with it. But most of the Amish stay in that community, correct? I mean, even going through Rumspringa, where they have a chance to drive a car or go to parties or dress English or any of those things.
Yes. I will actually say, though, that a lot of times, like in my experience, this is my personal experience, I actually was in Rumspringa when my husband came around. I had started joining church before we started dating.
Oh.
But I only started joining church because my parents said, you have to join church.
Okay, so what
it
does...
wasn't like, we see that you have accepted Jesus Christ as your Savior. Now we would like for you to, you know, you need to make that decision. It was just more of a, tomorrow you're going to start joining church.
So it was a cultural thing. You say start joining church. So explain that to me. How did that work?
When you join church, you have 9 sessions that you go in church. You go with the preachers, ministers, deacons to the, what I called the aprud, which is that small meeting that they take into a different area away from the church. And they do, they have articles that they go through as training on how to be a Christian.
I see. Where are the articles? What's the material from? Is it from a book that they use, or is it
in the? There's a German book that I actually think it's in the back of the Ausbund, the big book that they use for singing. I think it's in the back of that. There is a book, and it's called like 12 Articles of a Christian. Something.
I see. Now, and once you go through those sessions, are you then baptized into the church?
Yes. And then you're baptized. And once you're baptized, you're a member of the church.
Okay.
Then you have to do exactly what they say.
Right.
Like, then you're no longer are in Rumspringa then. You no longer wear jeans. You no longer.
But you're under their ordining or their ordinances or their rules of what
you're
they
under
say.
Their rules. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You have to be in church every, they have what they call council church, Atningskme, which means council church or rule church. And then there's Groeskme, which is communion. At communion, they would do the wine, and then they would break bread, which they use a regular loaf of bread. And they would do feet washing and alms, which they call almosi, which is giving to the poor. So they would put money in a bag.
Are those separate types of church services that you'd go to, and how often were they?
So communion church is a very, very, very long church. We would start church at 8:30 in the morning, and it was good if you got out by 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
I see.
So that was, they would go through scripture from where in the beginning, where God created the heaven and earth, all the way to the end where Jesus died on the cross.
Okay.
So they would literally go through the whole Bible and explain all the different scenarios that happened.
How often was communion church?
Twice a year.
And so what do the children do during that time?
The children actually stay at home.
Okay.
You have to find babysitters. It's just the members of the church are the only ones that go to council church and communion church.
And council church, that's more about the ordnung or the rules of the actual church and dealing with that in the membership. Is that what that entails?
Yeah, that's actually where they tell you everything. Like, so one thing that I can specifically remember is they would say what is allowed and what is not allowed.
Okay.
And so the one about the last time that we were there, they said, so we're going to start allowing you to use the battery-powered bikes.
Okay, the e-bikes.
The mm-hmm. e-bikes. And then they would do what we call a roading, which would be voting, I guess. And they would have, each person would say if they would be agreed to that.
I see.
They would have the ministers go around and get each person's opinion on on being allowed to use those bikes.
And that really explains why you can see some Amish doing one thing and another Amish not doing that thing, but maybe doing something else, why there's differences there, because each church decides its own rules outside of the basics.
That is absolutely right.
What you can do, what you can't do. And all of that is based, would you say, on the motivation behind that is to try to keep the congregation or the community centered and focused on what is important to them and not be distracted by the outside world nor drawn into the outside world.
Right. That is absolutely right. They actually say that we can be in the world but not of the world. Mm-hmm. And that always kind of stuck to me.
Yeah, and to be separate, I mean, that is a biblical premise that they're using in as part of their culture and in the way of life that they've chosen to do. And it makes sense even from the outside, if you're not religious, to understand that this is a culture that needs to perpetuate itself and to continue on. And in order to do that, you have to be separated. You have to be different and teach those who are being raised up in it how to live that life.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's just some people that just doesn't fit for them.
It doesn't fit for them. You're right. Absolutely. And then we've talked a little bit before about shunning, because that's something that you went through when you mm-hmm. left the Amish. And that's different in each church situation.
Every
as
setting
well.
Is different. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because there's some people that, my friends actually left the Amish before we did, and they're still being shunned. Like okay. they're probably never actually going to get their shunning lifted.
Okay. And be back with their family or be able to be with them and that kind of thing.
Their family is more, they're not as strict. So they actually are allowed to be with their family, which is very nice.
Yeah, that's very difficult to do. And maybe difficult for those of us on the outside to really completely understand how all of that works. But I am fascinated a little bit to see some of these things that you're not going to see just, first of all, just driving through the area or even living in the area. These are things that maybe you're not going to get a glimpse into. So I really appreciate your willingness to come and talk about that, because it helps me personally to understand a lot more about my Amish friends and their background and where they're coming from, and even the culture that we live in this area, because so much of it is influenced by the Amish culture. And I'm very, very grateful and thankful for that, because it makes this a very unique place to live, truly.
It really does. Yes, it does.
We talk about living in a bubble sometimes, and perhaps we do, but it's a very pleasant bubble, and I like it. I truly appreciated being able to raise my children in this area, to live in this area. There's a lot of things about it that I truly love and appreciate it. And at the same time, as with anything, anywhere, any community, any town, any people group, any culture, there are things that, you know, we would like to see changed or wish they could change or maybe are not. As you said, it's not a fit for everybody. It's not supposed to be, right?
No.
The Amish are not trying to convert the world to their culture.
No, not at all.
They're not
interested.
It's
actually rather hard for an English person to come in and become Amish, because there's a lot of things that they don't see before they're there.
Yes, yes.
I mean, if you imagine not having outlets in your house,
yeah,
what all does that take away from you? If you imagine not being able to get in your car and go somewhere, what all does that take away from you? That's one thing that I've seen people say they'd like to become Amish. I'm like, it's not all roses.
There's a whole lot more to it than maybe what you think. Although, I mean, making a change in our own lifestyle, we're absolutely able to do that, right?
Absolutely.
We can begin to focus on more of the simpler things of life, less screen time, less TV, less outside influences, more family time. All of those things are available to us. And I'm very thankful, as I said, for the Amish community really sort of being an example to us of what that looks like and how that plays out. Thanks again, Esther, for coming and talking with me. This is truly a delight to get a peek into a culture that is fascinating and yet sometimes hidden, because, as I said, it's it's isolated in many ways, just because that's the nature of it. And so getting a peek into that has been a real treat for all of us, I think. So,
well, you're welcome, Missy, and I enjoy it.
Well,
absolutely enjoy it.
I may have you back. You know me. I've got more questions. So thanks again for joining me on the podcast. And now it's time for Did You Know? Did you know that the Amish take little to no government aid? Choosing instead to bear one another's burdens, they band together to share the financial loads that may overtake their neighbors. This mutual aid extends to healthcare. The Amish Hospital Aid Group is a healthcare sharing ministry that many Amish participate in. Amish commonly believe that the commercial insurance plans undermine the religious duty of community accountability. They also share each other's burdens by offering free will donations. Amish aid works much like regular health insurance in that individuals have a share they are expected to pay. When they are billed, the bill goes to the individual, and whatever is above what they can afford, it is taken to the church. Often, like-minded churches share the financial burden, or perhaps auctions or fundraisers are organized for more expensive health care needs. By sharing the load in this manner, they raise hundreds of thousands of dollars to cover health care expenses. And now you know.